It's River to River from Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Ben Kiefer. My guest is former U.S. Congressman from Iowa, Neil Smith, the longest-serving Iowan in the United States House of Representatives. He's now in his 90s, and Neil Smith joins us today to reflect on his upbringing, his life, his military service. He's a decorated military veteran, served during the Second World War, and of course, his reflections on his time in politics and how politics have changed in the meantime. Congressman Neil Smith, what a pleasure, what an honor. Welcome to the program.
Well, I'm glad to be here.
Mm-hmm. You're now counsel with the Davis Brown Law Firm. You were a member of Congress from 1959 to 1994, some 35 years. I want to go back before that to get an idea of your early life. Born in 1920 in a house that was built by a great-grandfather who was a pioneer. Tell us about that.
Well, it was down in southeast Iowa, and actually my great-grandfather came to Iowa in the 1850s, and then this was his daughter married my grandpa, and that was where my parents lived for the first year or two of my life.
Mm-hmm.
And that was down near Martinsburg.
Tell us about your fondest memories of childhood growing up in the 1920s.
I had a pony, and the kids in the within miles around, 5 or 6 miles, you know, would ride our ponies in the summertime.
Mm.
And then we lived all back then. We were very poor. The farmers were very poor. And then you spent a lot of time in the timber, not only just walking and looking, but also hunting and trying to get some money, and then collecting berries and nuts and food. And you just spent a lot of time outdoors.
If you could go back to one day, one setting in your childhood in Iowa, what do you see that you would like to go back to and experience for a day?
Oh, my. I might just be walking out in the timber, and or I might be just sitting on a log in the timber and listening and watching, as I used to do sometimes. I'd go down and sit, kind of hide somewhere and watch the animals and the birds, and they communicate with one another. It's amazing how they communicate with one another. If there's a bad animal going to come through the woods, and a squirrel's out digging to get us to find a nut, a bird flies down through, warning people that there's a bad animal coming through, and the squirrel runs up the tree and looks around the corner of the tree. It's amazing how animals communicate with one another.
Mm-hmm. It sounds like when you talk about your early childhood and your interest there, you could have just as well become a fantastic biologist or in that field of a career.
Oh, biology was always interested to me, and I think it is to all children, really, if they have an opportunity to be exposed to it.
Right, and so many children stay indoors. We have all these electronics, don't we?
And it's amazing. I go down to the wildlife refuge and I see kids down there, and they came right out of Des Moines and they don't know anything about animals. And just as soon as they get down there, their eyes open up and they really become interested in animals and birds and bugs and everything else.
So you were born in 1920. You're in your teens. Well, I guess the stock market crash happens, of course, in 1929, leads us into the long Great Depression.
Yes.
What are your starkest memories of you're in Iowa at this time, I believe, at this time
of
the Depression?
During the deepest Depression days, 1932, right along in there, people left cities, got on trains, rode, and then they'd jump off the train and walk down the road in the country, and they didn't have any money, and they would knock on the door and would give them a little bit of food, but people in those days, they didn't think about stealing or hurting somebody. everybody understood that they were just trying to exist, and people were really, really poor. Mm-hmm. But we were so fortunate because we had a way to get some food. We lived in the country, and we could go out in the timber and pick berries, and then we could raise a garden. People in the city couldn't do that, and that was the reason some of the people that were, we called them bums, they were just good people that would come down the road. Some of them were men who left because the like places like Chicago, they would leave because the public welfare, there wasn't enough food for the whole family, and so they, in soup lines and stuff. But so some of the men would leave and just travel around the country, mm-hmm. And then go back when they could.
Now you're a teen during the deepest part of the Depression, and these bums are around also in the area.
In 32, I was 12 years old.
Right. So were you allowed or did you befriend any of these?
Yes. They would. We didn't even lock our doors. Out on the farm at night, didn't even lock the door. People wouldn't hurt anybody. And if they'd come to the door and knock on the door and ask, can I sleep in your haymow? Sure, go ahead. It was just different. Mm-hmm. And even in a little town, I lived 2 miles from Packwood, there were two grocery stores, no marshal. No law overnight, and there were people who were sleeping in down at the tile factory pond. They wouldn't go up there and break a window and go in. No, that just didn't occur. Hmm. It was just different back then.
That's amazing to think about that. Now, yes. We've heard so many perspectives about the Great Depression from adults, but this is you had a 12-year-old's perspective, a teenager's perspective on this. Did you get the sense of doom that some adults would have? Did you think that this was the end of the United States?
Yes, people did. Some of the kids would stand around and listen to the old folks talk, and some of them were talking about they got a war going on over there in Europe, and so they've got something to do. You know, it was as if we need a Hitler, you know.
We need a Hitler. You heard your friends say that?
Yeah, I've heard. Well, I don't know if that's the
so
exact
some adults.
Words, but the fact is they thought, well, if they're doing better over there than they are here, you know. People were desperate. Yeah. They really were.
If you've just joined us, Neil Smith is my guest, a former U.S. congressman from Iowa. He is the longest serving Iowan in the United States House of Representatives, served from 1959 to 1994, some 35 years. Let's talk about the period after that. You were a major in the U.S. Army Air Corps from 1942 to 1945, in fact, a bomber pilot. I understand your plane was shot down.
Well, I tell you, I don't ever talk about it. I was in the Pacific, mm-hmm. and I was... I came back, and many of my friends did not come back, and they were just forgotten about, you know?
Mm-hmm. Well, I want to respect your wish not to talk about it, but I also want to mention and thank you for your service. You're highly decorated, receiving a Purple Heart and many other decorations for your service to our country. Let's talk about your political career. What first made you think you were cut out for political life?
I think that it was in the 30s. We would listen to the radio. H.R. Gross would come on with the news, and we had some hope, and it just seemed like the people in there that were working in government, they were trying to help improve the situation, and it made one think that, well, government service is a good thing to do. And back then, it was you didn't have people trying to say something bad about somebody. Just what can we do to help, you know? and it just seemed like a good thing to do. But then in 1948, I was out here at Drake in law school, and Harry Truman was running for re-election, and they said he had no hope whatever of winning, but it just seemed bad because I thought we needed him. And so I went down to state headquarters and asked what I could do to help, and the state chairman said, well, you could start a Young Democrats club out at Drake. Said there used to be one out there, so I started one out there, and then I got real active in that campaign and then continued after that being active.
You became U.S. Congressman and actually in office in 1959. You were elected in the election of 1958. This was a Democratic landslide, Eisenhower's second term. What do you remember about winning your first seat in office?
Well, I wasn't expected to win, of course. There'd only been one Democrat ever represented Polk County before, and he only lasted one term back in the 30s. And so it was not expected, really, that I would win.
What was it that set the course for your win? Was it your campaign, the national feeling, the feeling in Iowa?
I'm not quite sure what it all was, but it helped, I think. I bought three television programs, 5 minutes each for $75. And I was the first one, I think, that we got on television in Iowa. The stations, there were three stations, and they didn't have enough advertising to sell. I mean, they didn't have enough advertisers wanting to buy time. And they actually would cut 5 minutes out of the end of some program they had. And so that helped me get some... become acquainted.
Do you remember what you talked about in those first television ads?
I had a rule. I had my own rule. You only talk about three subjects, and I did talk some about the oil situation at the time, the oil companies, some of the things they were doing, and just about the need for a farm program.
You were in office over 36 years. 36 years, an incredible length of time. Yes. to serve in Congress.
Well, you see, I was elected in 58, and my partner was elected judge that year. And the same thing with judge, he wasn't expected to win, but he was on the ticket, and we both got elected. And my wife was a lawyer, too, and I wanted her to go with me to Washington, so that broke up the law firm. Mm-hmm. Well, then, what do you do? I didn't have a law firm to go back to, so I said, well, I'm going to try to, I'll offer myself, I'll stay and see if I can do something that I feel is worthwhile. And so I laid out kind of a course of things that I wanted to do. That would be worthwhile, worth my time. And actually, I was losing money because I had a good law practice and it was costing me money, but after you get elected, you don't want to just say, well, I won't take the job.
Right.
And so I stayed, and then that's just the way it went. It just went on and on and on. And I stayed working on things that I was interested in, and especially not just agricultural things. I was interested in food safety and education, legislation, and also in development of the Des Moines River Valley. Mm-hmm. All the way from up north down through Red Rock, and one of the issues that I was for was getting Red Rock started, and got it started in my first term, and then worked on Sailorville, got Sailorville, and then we worked on a number of projects along with that, that the Corps of Engineers operate, used to be on weekends you had no place to go unless you were wealthy enough to have a place up in the northern Great Lakes. Most people didn't have any place to go on a weekend to be with nature.
I want to, specifically on wildlife, your name is so connected, literally, in the Neil Smith Wildlife Refuge, but also in the many things that you did while you were in Congress that had to do with flood control, wildlife, recreational, nature projects have all been important to you. With the perspective you have now, in your 90s, how satisfied are you overall with the way Iowa's natural heritage has been maintained?
When I first went to Congress, the river was considered an enemy, and actually it didn't need to be considered an enemy. And the whole Des Moines River Valley is a wonderful thing if it's developed and taken care of. And so it has been important. It was important, but it just was. And downtown Des Moines from 5th Street over to the river, that was all just junk. People wouldn't keep up the buildings because they were afraid the next flood would come along. And so then by getting Sailorville, it protected that area and it made downtown Des Moines possible to be rebuilt. And it's just... the old man river can do whatever it wants to do, but you can actually tame it down and help, and it can be a big asset instead of a liability.
Mm-hmm. Water quality, a big concern these days. Do you share that concern?
Everybody's concerned about water quality, but people always want somebody else to make the quality better. But we got to be practical about it. There are limitations on what humans can do, but yes, water quality is important, and we can expect now that we want pure water. Well, then you can expect that you're going to have to do something to purify the water.
Mm-hmm. Neil Smith is with me, joining me as. Member of U.S. Congress from 1959 to 1994, and with this perspective, it's really something to hear you reflect on the way politics used to be, and I'd like to juxtapose that with the way politics are today. We talk about politics a lot on this program. You were in Washington for 36 years.
It was an honor to be there. It was a real honor to be there, and people honored people that were there, and that was one reason that people wanted to serve.
Mm-hmm.
And now it's turned into, in many ways, trying to hurt somebody else and just being dishonorable and defending things. You know, it's just awful the way it's turned out, and some of it is the great advancements, we call it, in technology. You got instant technology. And get on the air and distribute both information and misinformation.
Would you want to be a candidate today? Were you to be a younger...
I wouldn't.
And so this idea of what government is has really changed in your lifetime. You mentioned earlier in our conversation that what motivated you was that people perceived government to be a good thing.
Absolutely, and it was good to be there and to help and to work on things that would improve things in the neighborhood and in the state. And there are a lot of people that's one of the things. A lot of people won't run now that used to run. Used to give up what they were doing that was financially a cost to them to do it, but they were willing to do it because it was an honorable thing to do, and they felt like that they were getting some satisfaction out of having done something that was helpful.
Do you see any chances? Do you have hope that in this respect the clock could be turned back to?
It's very difficult. It's going to take some constitutional amendments, I think, to do it. You've got to have something about this thing. I spent $10,300 on my first election. $10,300. Now they're spending millions of dollars on elections. It's just terrible what has happened with regard to the amount of money that's being spent. And it's most of it going for television. They pay $800 now for 30 seconds, and I paid $75 for 5 minutes.
Right. So campaign finance reform would be at the top of the list.
Oh,
for
yes,
the change.
Yes.
So what should our system be other than what we have now?
Well, former Justice Stevens has two amendments, and one of them has to deal with the Supreme Court decision that just opened up. It made
from 2010, Citizens United from 2010.
Yeah, Citizens United, and it's going to take a constitutional amendment probably to do some correcting on that. It's just terrible. If a corporation has no limit, is treated like a citizen, and they have foreigners own this a lot of the stock of the corporation, you even have foreigners influencing elections in the United States indirectly through that. That's going to take constitutional amendment.
Neil Smith, former congressman, what a pleasure. Thank you so much for coming into our studio today. It's been a pleasure and honor to talk with you and to have you share some of your memories and reflections.
Thank you.
And that's it for today. River to River is produced by Lindsay Moon, Emily Woodbury, and Claire Roth. Our executive producer is Catherine Perkins. River to River is a production of Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Ben Kiefer. Thanks for joining us.